Welcome to Exploring Boys Education, a podcast produced by IBSC. I'm your host, Bruce Collins. In each episode, we delve into topics of interest for educators and leaders in boys' schools in support of those of you who, like IBSC, champion boys' education. In this episode, we highlight the work of the IBSC Libraries and Reading Culture Special Interest Group, focusing on different ways IBSC schools can motivate boys to embrace a strong reading culture. To give you more details about this episode and other IBSC programming, I'm pleased to welcome back IBSC Executive Director Tom Batty, who joins us again for the IBSC Newsreel.
Many thanks, Bruce, and a warm welcome to all joining this podcast. We know the significance of boys' reading in their academic progress, particularly as assessment has become more contextual. We also know that reading provides one of the earliest means through which we ponder our condition, put ourselves in others' shoes, and the important part this plays in boys' development of empathy, particularly in an information-rich age. And we also know the sheer affirming joy that comes with being lost in our own thoughts away from the noise. Instilling the habit of reading in boys is both art and science. It's a skill that quite literally changes lives. As Bruce mentioned, this episode highlights the good work of the IBSC Libraries and Reading Culture Special Interest Group. Representing the Special Interest Group to share the insights gleaned from their research are Trish Sislak, recently retired from Crescent School in Canada, Carolyn Friedlander from Woodbury Forest School in the United States, Amaryllis Barton from King Edward VI School in the United Kingdom, and Australians Jason Sicily from the Southport School and Gabrielle Mace from St. Augustine's College in Sydney. Before we dive into their research on boys and books, I'd like to again remind that all details of the IBSC's program offerings can be found on the IBSC website. Following four online events for teachers of boys in August and September, we are hosting an online event in October, focused on helping younger boys thrive in a diverse world. And in November, we'll be hosting an online panel discussion for women teaching in boys' schools. Our Boys and Belonging and Teachers New to Boys' Schools online classes start at the end of September, and we have several ideas labs coming up. So to find a cohort to suit your needs, visit the IBSC website to browse current offerings. Now, over to you, Bruce, as we turn the page to getting boys back to books.
We start this conversation with Trish Sislak, who I'm going to ask to introduce the IBSC Reading Culture Special Interest Group, how it came about and its primary purpose. Trish spearheaded this initiative and such a great foundation for helping IBSC schools understand boys in reading, particularly in that adolescent phase. So, Trish, why don't you share a little bit about how the SIG came about and what its primary purpose was?
Thanks, Bruce. You know, we all have these sort of intuitions about what we think is best for boys and how can we create a really powerful reading culture. But what happened was that the special interest group actually created an opportunity for us to do a deep dive. And what we needed was a collective. We needed many voices and many perspectives. And I think that's what really inspired me to apply to have the special interest group. I think that the idea of the roles of teacher librarians and English teachers, because that's actually a big chunk of our group as well, in terms of the value of reading, really speaks to how what we see as an important priority in the lives of our schools. And it really goes back to the vision of our schools all speak about character development, and reading is such a great vehicle to read widely, understand global perspectives, appreciate what others bring to the table, develop a sense of empathy. And we know those are all components of character development. And it just seemed like a really easy way to marry these important facets of the lives of the boys that we teach. And those are all of the factors that inspired to say, let's get this special interest group going. And here we are.
the SRG was broken into smaller groups, and you were part of the group who looked at reader identity, and I think that's a great place to start.
You know, this idea of reader identity has stuck with me since Andrew Reiner spoke at the 2017 annual conference, and he spoke about the definition of masculinity and the societal expectations of young men and the stigmas that came in with reading. And it's just always made me wonder, is it because they're actually young men that's holding them back from really embracing reading as a tool and as an outlet and as an ability to be more well, and all of these things that was really were creating obstacles for boys to consider themselves readers. So we had a shared survey as well and shared insights, and trying to sort of get at, is it the fact that you are a young man with the pressures of the society on you that's holding you back? And what kind of revealed throughout all of the different activities that our different schools did was the ability or the inability to have that social emotional connection to what they're reading and to actually care about the impact that these experiences in the books had on them. And so that role modeling comes into play, and all of the other realms we realized are stemmed off of the reader identity. And so there needs to be readers who are leaders and role models, and there needs to be that social aspect, and there needs to be time and space for reading in our schools. And so those all play a part of developing the reader identity. And it's really interesting. It's not just because they're young men. It's all of the things rolled into one that really gets them to understand how they connect with books.
I'm wondering what you discovered about the, And I love this. I think it was an image you used in your presentation of the puzzle of a boy's reader identity. What did you discover about the pieces of that puzzle that complete the boy's sense of his identity as a reader?
I think that sort of all of the moving parts, I think they ebb and flow at different times within a boy's life. And probably one of the biggest one is the sense of male role models. And in terms of who are they connecting to in terms of readers themselves? So the male role modeling was a big piece. The ability for us as teachers in boys' schools to really tap into our relational pedagogy and to really build relationships with the boys, I think comes into a part where they start to trust you, and then they would trust the recommendations you give. So it's some sort of another bit of the puzzle piece that comes into play. You know, the sense of that it's the value of reading. Our boys are so driven to be academically superior and to take that step and launch into the next step and head off to the uni of their choice. But the disconnection between understanding your academic prowess is actually the result of being a really good reader, that seems to get lost with them. And so trying to bring that to the forefront, that you can be academically strong and you can just enhance it if you're a strong reader. And it comes across in your reading and your writing style and your interpretation and your comprehension. So those are just some of the aspects that must swirl around the boys' lives each day, trying to decide if they're going to commit as a reader.
I love the way that is framed, you know, Trish, to have a relationship with reading. And, you know, it just strikes me that, you know, boys, we know, are relational learners. And if we can hook them with that relational piece in terms of really sensing that a book is a partner, I think that can be really, really powerful. And I'm very excited to speak to others now about, you know, the other areas that link into this whole idea of a boy's reading identity and how schools can think about encouraging boys to dive into books and to get hooked on books. We're also privileged to have Carolyn Friedlander here from Woodbury Forest School in Virginia in the United States. Your group in particular was looking at the social aspects of reading, and those dynamics are quite interesting, I think. And the research indicates that boys often hesitate to talk about reading, and that's something that has come up in other conversations too with librarians around the world.
Yeah, they just don't know how to. It just hasn't been modeled for them in many cases. So I think if their family members and other key adults in their lives aren't showing them how to share their experiences with reading, then they just don't understand that it can be a really social activity. So I know as educators, a lot of us are really comfortable with talking about reading. If you think of somebody who's an active reader in your life, they're often sharing book recommendations or talking about what they're reading at the lunch table, or maybe when they meet somebody new, they ask them what they're reading, and then you can form this bond with somebody if you have a shared like series in common that you love. But I think it's really important that as educators, we model this for students. We show them that reading can be just as social as talking about maybe like their favorite video games or their shows that they're watching right now. So for us, a big part was just, thinking about how do we show our students how to talk about books? How do we model that? And then how do we also create these spaces for them outside of the formal classroom setting to practice these conversations?
What are some of the implications from the literature and also from your findings as a smaller group within the SRG for educators of boys? And what are some schools doing to promote reading as a social endeavor?
Right. So part of our group's research was to actually send out a survey to students within the five schools. And one of the big takeaways from one of the questions that we asked was about social spheres and spheres of influence. And in that survey, we realized that boys are actually really influenced by the people in their lives, meaning that when people recommend books to them that are in their spheres of influence, they take that to heart. So the survey results actually showed us that family members were the biggest influence in their reading selection, followed by teachers and friends and coaches. And this shows us that boys really do want to know what their role models and friends are reading, and that they're much more likely to read a book that's been recommended by someone that they trust and that they look up to, rather than something that's just been promoted on their social media feed. So my colleague Phoebe Wormack and I, we actually created a display that was based on teacher and staff recommendations. And it was actually a huge success, maybe one of the most successful displays we've ever had, because it brought students into the library to see what their teachers and their coaches had chosen. And when they actually read the book, the coolest part was that they reached out to their teacher to share their reactions to this book. So these are the kind of social interactions that we're really wanting to see with reading throughout our school. We actually have had a huge success within our member schools of book clubs and reading challenges as giving a space to discuss shared reads. And they don't have to be just student specific. You can also have ones that include faculty and family members, because we're trying to bring in that layer of community modeling, showing that other people in their lives are reading as well, and it's something that you can bond with these other people in your lives.
Yeah, and I suppose not shying away from boys who might seem reticent, but pushing through that barrier. And I think often once we push through that barrier and momentum builds, amazing things can happen.
Absolutely.
We're also joined by Amaryllis Barton from the UK, from King Edward VI School in Stratford-on-Avon. Wonderful to have you with us. There's so many different levels of understanding boys and reading, and I know your group was focused on modes of reading, and the research suggests that boys and girls experience reading modes differently. I wonder if you can shed any light on what those differences are and how they influence reading choices.
Absolutely. Thanks, Bruce. So to start with, basically study after study reveals that boys basically find reading less enjoyable and more difficult than girls. It's not an especially groundbreaking comment, and that's, of course, the reason why we're all here. And you see that anecdotally in the classroom, and you see it in national and international research as well. So basically, my group were interested in whether changing the mode of reading, i.e. whether rather than giving a boy a paperback, you give them an ebook, an audiobook, a graphic novel, or even if you just read out loud, whether changing that mode can change really the whole narrative on boys and reading. And when we started, if I'm honest, we didn't really know what we'd find. We had some assumptions about what might be the case. We thought there'd be differences, but actually, I think really there were far more differences than we would have expected. our starting point was to look at different modes of reading. And probably the two which had the biggest gender difference were ebooks and graphic novels. So they're the two that I'll talk to you about now. So ebooks help us understand the different gender experiences and perceptions of reading habits for boys and girls. So a great starting point there is a 2019 PISA study, which found that boys were significantly more likely to report that they read on screen than in print outside of school. And actually, this same study revealed that in screen reading, there was much more equality between boys and girls in their reading proficiency. That actually making boys read things on screen seemed to improve their reading scores. Then, looking at a UK study from 2019 on using technology to help improve boys' literacy, this was really enlightening, because more than one third of young people agree with the statements, that's boys and girls, reading on a screen is cooler than reading a book. But this actually increased to half of boys who don't enjoy reading. And of course, they're our target audience. They're the boys that we really want whose hands we really want to put a book. So really, you can take the two takeaways you can have from this, and it's that screen reading is more gender neutral than reading a paperback, but also that it can appeal to precisely the boys we want to help. But of course, reading on the screen is basically just changing the format of what you're reading. The material, the base material, is actually the same. And this is where graphic novels become really interesting, as students are actually engaging with narrative, not just words on a page, but graphics and words on a page. And Margaret Merger, whose research I really enjoy, she talks about graphic novels as a way into traditional novels. And that's great. I'm an English teacher. If I can get more boys excited about Great Expectations by giving them a graphic novel, then of course I'm happy. But what was way more interesting was Robin Weller's research, which revealed that males respond to that combination of visual elements and textual elements actually differently to girls. And this would suggest that graphic novels can attract a different kind of a reader, particularly one who might be intimidated by text on page alone. Basically, that helps create a different kind of connection to a text. And Moella's argument is that it mimics how students, of course, boys are engaging with the world, which might be through, you know, on a day-to-day basis, texting, GIFs and memes. So I'm not saying that we should abandon paperbacks and bring in an entirely new diet of screen reading and graphic novels. I actually think it's all a virtuous cycle. And I think that, and that's also backed up by lots of research as well. And you know, lots of the PISA studies reveal that too. But basically what this has made us realise, I think particularly me as an English teacher, with my probably prejudices about what is best in terms of how boys should read, is that good reading strategy is about finding the right, it's not just about finding the right book for the right boy, it's about finding the right book in the right mode for the right boy.
So Amaryllis, just as you look about what your group found out about modes of reading as you engaged with boys in your schools, how did this sort of compare to what you were reading? What did you experience as you heard from boys?
Yeah, we've just spoken about how it's about finding the right mode and the right book. And our experience is actually, to some extent, our boys have realised this. And that was probably one of the things we're most surprised about, that there's lots of boys engaging with audiobooks, ebooks and graphic novels outside of school. And these are, I guess, less traditional forms of reading, and the students aren't actually looking in traditional places for them. And in the eyes of probably your average 14-year-old boy, a library is about as traditional a place in the school as you can get. So apps like Audible and Spotify and YouTube, they're really popular amongst boys in our schools. But equally, we found that students have really strong feelings about which mode of reading they like. And what was most intriguing was that these opinions varied quite radically between the different schools that we're looking at. So we surveyed four schools, obviously each, one in the UK, one in the US, and then two in Australia. And they were really radically different. So this would suggest there's not a one-size-fits-all necessarily. And also it would suggest that boys' opinions on these modes of reading are actually malleable and with better targeting, better education about how to read them. The most interesting part of the survey process, I thought, was the student voice bit. And probably my favourite one is a boy who's put, "I read more touching or inspirational books as audiobooks." I think there's quite a lot that we can unpack from that quotation, that maybe there's something about the kind, we should consider the kinds of books we offer as audiobooks. Should we offer more autobiographies or first-person stories? Should we think about having recommendations as audiobooks, recommendations as ebooks, maybe recommendations as paperbacks? But there's another great quotation. Audiobooks and ebooks are completely super cool and sick. They also help me relax, and nobody can know what book I'm reading. And first off, I really love the energy and positivity towards audiobooks. But equally, there's a really important element there about the antisocial element of reading. And we talk a lot about how we want to bring boys together and help them read in a community. And that's, of course, really important. But there's also a space for students who want to read away from prying eyes and away from the judgment of maybe parents and peers, if they're reading something that's maybe a bit out there and a bit different to maybe the image that they're putting forward of themselves in the world. There's also lots of comments about students wanting to multitask with books and enjoying the sense that they've got a little voice going somewhere with them. Lots of things about books being, ebooks in particular, being free and accessible. And again, a sense of wanting to enjoy books away from pressure, be that financial or a sense of parents saying, well, I bought it, you should read it. We did hope that more reluctant readers might engage with different modes of reading, and maybe that boys who we'd not seen perhaps borrowing as many books in the library might read quite differently. But actually, we didn't find that, and we found that the most frequent readers tended to read the most range of modes as well. So there's definitely some work to do there. And I think it all comes back to what I've said before about putting the right book in the right mode in the hands of the right boy. And I think that's a really interesting addition to a school's reading strategy. It's certainly something that we'll be looking at with introducing when we go back.
Probably once you get a boy hooked and he is already a regular reader, the next conversation might be about modes of reading and introducing him to different ways too. It's not necessarily that a mode of reading is going to get a boy to read. It might, but also, you know, it's actually part of the bigger picture of boys understanding how best to engage with books. Jason Cycli from the Southport School, it's wonderful to have you with us as well and part of this team, and we're grateful for the input that you and others in your sort of smaller group had on this research into getting boys back to books. Jason, the group you were a part of focused on leaders as readers. I'm wondering if you can explain the significance of role modeling in shaping boys' attitudes towards reading.
Sure. Thanks, Bruce. When I think about the significance of role models in shaping boys' attitudes, the word that stands out for me is boys. And the reason I think role models are significant with boys is threefold that I can think of. The first is that role models can be used to challenge gender stereotypes around reading. And I think for boys, that's really important. Societal stereotypes sometimes suggest that reading is a more feminine activity, and it can cause boys to disengage or even fail to attempt to read, especially environments where masculine ideals are emphasized, like single-sex schools. So having positive male role models who actively engage in reading can challenge this stereotype by demonstrating that intellectual pursuits are not confined to any one gender. So when boys see admired figures, whether they're teachers, sports coaches, or other students embracing reading, it can send a powerful message that reading is for everyone, not just a particular group. So I think that's the first way that they can significantly affect boys' attitudes. I think secondly, just around the idea of modelling and shaping and reshaping perception, boys are highly influenced by the behaviours of those they look up to. So when role models do regularly engage in reading and express enthusiasm for it, they do help normalise the activity and they do shift perception. And the visibility of reading role models helps boys to understand that reading is not only a valuable skill, but something that can be used as a source of enjoyment and personal growth. And then I think finally, the third way is that it does expand horizons and creates paradigm shifts beyond traditional activities. So in single-sex schools, especially I think boys' schools, there can be a strong emphasis on traditional activities such as sports and prioritizing them. And while activities like sports are important, it's equally vital to provide boys with alternatives for their own expression and development.
I love that whole idea of the impact we can have as teachers on boys, and you know, you mentioned sports, and you know, it's not a zero sum game, sports
right.
or reading. And so I love that you mentioned that. I was very interested in the research that your particular group did around how, you know, the whole school can impact a reading culture. And you spoke about the influence of teachers, but also teacher librarians, and then also students on boys. I'm fascinated to hear just briefly how these groups inspire boys to pick up a book, and what strategies have proven to be effective in boys' schools, would you say?
I think with regards teachers and teacher librarians, we didn't really do anything during our year of action research. We didn't do anything beyond the norm. We engage teachers and teacher librarians in competitions, in our teacher recommend displays. We invited them to be part of our book clubs. So we had a staff and student book club together. And those kind of things have been around for a long while. What I was most fascinated by in the action research for the past 12 months was the significant impact students had as influences on engaging in reading. And that's really where I saw the most significant difference. So over the course of the year, I ran, you know, activities, competitions, clubs, displays designed to influence boys to read for pleasure. And I found that ultimately it was peers and student leaders that had the biggest impact. And I called it basically the power of popularity. I found that the most popular, well-known students seemed to have the most ethos on campus and were the most influential when it came to impacting reading for pleasure. Students, I think, trust their peers. They trust other students. I think they've already proven, they've built those relationships in the schoolyard, in the classroom. They know what they like. They know what their friends like. So when their friend recommends something or someone they respect recommends something, they're more inclined to listen than they are to a 53-year-old teacher librarian or a 53-year-old English teacher. What do you know, sir? So I really was most impressed by the statistically significant difference student recommendations can make on a school cohort.
Gabrielle Mace is from St. Augustine's, also in Australia. In your group, you looked at a slightly different angle to what we've spoken about before, and that's this whole connection between reading culture and leadership. I wonder, just as we dip our toe into this part of the research that the SIG did, how would you define a thriving reading culture, first of all, and what role does leadership play in cultivating this culture within a school?
Well, thank you for having me, Bruce. It's lovely to be back chatting on the podcast with you. When we talk about a thriving reading culture, it's been fascinating over the last year to really focus on leadership. And so when we talk about an environment where reading is not just encouraged, but it needs to be a clear part of the school's identity. And beyond that, it must be a part of the strategic plan, because that's what principals and school leaders recognise. It is a part of the school identity and it is part of the strategic plan. It's got to be woven into daily activities. It's got to be celebrated and it's got to be visible to everyone in the community. And when a school can do this and when they can see that reading is enjoyable and it's beneficial and it's a shared experience that connects students and teachers and leaders, that's when we get traction. I've brought it down to six key areas. And the first one is vision setting and prioritisation. Leadership begins with a clear vision that places reading at the heart of the school's educational mission. The leaders have to articulate why reading is vital, not just for academic success, but for the building of personal growth and empathy and critical thinking and all that neuroscience that we know now is tied up with reading, particularly fiction. They need to make reading a strategic priority that is outlined in the strategic plan, and it has to influence the school's direction. And it's got to be curriculum, it's got to be co-curricular activities, it's got to be embedded everywhere we can in the school. Then it's about modelling behaviour. It's about leaders saying, well, I'm going to model this behaviour through their own actions. And when principals and deputies and year advisors and teachers are actively seen reading books or discussing books, that sends a very strong message to our boys that reading is valued. But leaders can definitely model that behaviour by sharing what they're reading, getting up at assembly, making sure that it's a sign-off in every email they send out to parents and other leaders alike, I'm currently reading this or I've got these books on the go. Read a piece aloud to the students. Communicate it with parents that they value reading and that it's a lifelong activity. Then they've got to create an environment that enables reading, and that is about allocating resources to their school library. It is about ensuring that their school library is staffed with highly professional, trained people, because we can do everything, but if we don't have an enabled environment, then it's just not gonna work. We need to make sure those professionals are in the space to make the collections diverse and as wide-ranging as possible. We need to get the boys in and let them have freedom to choose. We've got to say some books are mirrors and some books are windows. We can't just push the cannons on these boys. We have to give them an entry point with a place that makes sense to them and that makes reading a fluid and enjoyable activity. It's about removing barriers, and that is about time constraints as well. Embedded reading programs embedded within the school day, I really believe, is the way forward. Then you've also got, you've got to make a long-term commitment. You have to, if you want to cultivate a reading culture as a leader in the school, you have to lead by example. And this is not a fast thing. It will take a drip feeding approach, and it can take years to build this, but it's very incremental. And if you have leadership on board from the beginning, you're going to get a lot more traction.
I'm wondering if you can share some examples of initiatives that have successfully fostered a lifelong reading in boys.
Well, when I talk about positive reading memories, what you're really wanting to do is you're wanting to leave a lasting impression on the boys. And that's, every positive reading memory is going to be unique to each student. What you're trying to do is foster that lifelong love of books amongst the boys. Now, there's initiatives, of course, there's reading challenges and competitions and, you know, book clubs and reading groups, and you can have author visits and literary events and reader advisory, and I can unpack all of those for you. But the thing that I believe creates the happiest, most impactful and long-lasting reading memory is the space and the service you provide in your library. You can take away all the bells and whistles, but if you have a welcoming environment, if you have a diverse collection, if student voice and ownership of that space is evident, and it's the personalised reading recommendations through Read Advisory, it's the investment of time, it is the energy and kindness and patience and dedication that nurtures strong reading memories, happy reading memories amongst our students and our boys. And that's what I set out to do every day. And I ask the teams that I lead in, no matter what library I'm leading at that time, that's the intentionality and the purpose where we have to go into that space. And sometimes I've said we need to look beyond the data and beyond the borrowing data. And I will tell a, you know, an example of the child who can't find solace on the playground, and they come to a library for that. And it's about allowing that space. That is what it takes. You can do all the competitions and all the games and the Padlets and the this and the that. It is about highly qualified staff that love being in the space they're residing in. And that is why I say to leadership, it is not an admin area. It's an area of great learning and growth. And that's why we have to have money in school libraries, purposeful staff in school libraries, time devoted to school libraries, because they are a place of great literacy and growth beyond the bells and the whistles.
Yeah. So Tricia's, as we close this conversation, you know, each of the folk who have contributed to this podcast, you know, I know there are teams of four or five other people, 23 people in total, who are part of this Reading Culture SIG that has given us such great insights. And I know these folk will continue to drive those initiatives at their schools and beyond. What are your biggest takeaways from this engagement with boys' schools around the world and your hopes for the future of boys' reading engagement.
It has been an absolute pleasure to have sort of launched this SIG, but to work with the team leads. So Jason, Gabrielle, Millis, and Carolyn coming into play with us. It's been an incredible professional opportunity that I'm very grateful for. We all see it. We all know that this is an important piece. We all know the benefits, the many benefits that reading can have in the lives of our boys. And for us to be able to break down into those five different realms and try to highlight aspects of each to create a reading culture that we think could be fulsome and wholesome for the boys was really exciting for us. It has only inspired us to think about what's next down the road. The options are actually quite endless, but I know that we are passionate and we're really excited to see what's going to happen as the next year unfolds.
Thanks, Trish, for getting this ball rolling, for pulling it all together, for getting folks on board, and to the others who contributed to this conversation for this episode too. Really, really grateful.
Not much left for me to say, but maybe Taylor Jenkins Reid is right when he says that a good book should be either the entry point inward to learn about yourself or a door outward to open you up to new worlds. Let's encourage our boys to read, to fuel their imaginations, to grow their empathy muscles, to understand themselves better, and to reach unimaginable heights. Thank you for listening. Until next time, keep on championing boys' education.